Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley and I'm super excited for this week's show. We are still under quarantine, but that doesn't mean that I can't have awesome guests speaking to me remotely from Los Angeles. Please welcome back to the show to talk the Omega Man, writer-director Jackson Stewart. Hey, Jackson.
Hey, thank you for having me on, Mr. Bromley.
How are you holding up?
I'm terrific. I've got no complaints. You know, doing a lot of cooking at home, getting, you know, some work done, watching a bunch of old movies, basically my usual routine, minus, you know, trips to the movie theater, but I've adjusted fairly well.
Are you missing the movie theater at all?
Yeah, of course, you know. It's hard not to, but you know, I'm confident it'll come back at some point. How about you?
Doing okay. Just hunkered down with Erica and the kids, and I've said other places, like, and you and I were kind of just saying before we started recording, this isn't such a drastic change from my regular life, you know. It's certainly limiting in terms of being able to go out and run errands, but like I'm not the most social person, so it's not like, oh man, I haven't been able to go out, you know. A lot of the talking that I do is stuff like this to people who are far away, so I'm still able to do that, so I'm very fortunate.
Yeah, and like you've also got like the fully baked in family life, which I think like erodes a lot of the desire to like go out and, you know, like socialize every evening. It's like you kind of have your little unit there, you know.
Absolutely. I'm very fortunate to be quarantined with my wife and kids. We talk all the time about like, what about people who are in lockdown with people they can't stand, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very grateful to be living alone, so that's...
you mentioned watching some old movies. Anything good that you've checked out lately?
Yeah, there's been a good chunk of stuff. I mean, some of it's like, you know, I rewatched... I've just been watching all the kind of thematically relevant apocalypse movies, like... You know, I rewatched the Romero Dead trilogy. What else? You know, some stuff on Turner Classic Movies. Like I rewatched Thing from Another World, which was excellent. What else? This Victor Mature movie called I Wake Up Screaming. That was really cool. Captain Kronos, Vampire Hunter. Rewatched The Apartment. That's a stone cold classic.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I mean, just, you know, a lot of like good kind of comfort movies. I've been, you know, rewatching a bunch of Stuart Gordon's movies, of course, with, you know, him passing away recently.
Yeah.
They're terrific. Oh, and Winchester 73, which was amazing, and I'm totally obsessed with that.
What's all right, two questions. One, in the wake of Stuart Gordon's passing, what's his movie that you want to turn everybody on to?
You know, probably King of the Ants. I think that one is super underrated.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, rewatching it too, it's like it does feel somewhat relevant to, you know, because I mean, this is a bit of a spoiler, but you know, the main character gets locked up for a pretty long amount of time in a, you know, not great area, and has to kind of deal with his like mental demons coming to the forefront, which, you know, I think a lot of people probably are on the same wavelength right now. But yeah, it's like a super underrated movie, and, you know, Chris McKenna's amazing in it. It's just everyone in it is phenomenal. And I think it's also cool, like, to see how kind of like elastic Stewart was with making these different kinds of movies, where it's like, it doesn't feel like Reanimator or From Beyond or these other kind of, you know, 80s like splatter movies he was making, but it still has his sense of like authorship and, you know, doom and kind of his like flavor to it that you wouldn't necessarily think would translate into this like super gritty crime movie.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that makes me wish that he got to make more of those kinds of crime movies, because it's really badass.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, the ending's fantastic, and it also just doesn't pull any punches too on so many things that, like, if it was a studio movie, you're just like, there's no way any of that would fly. But yeah, that's the one I'd recommend people checking out. I think it's on Prime right now too.
It is. I just checked while you were talking about it, and it is on Prime, and you get to see George Wendt play a heavy.
Oh yeah, and George is fucking terrifying in it.
He's awesome. And, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like he's one of your fellow Chicagoans, but yeah, it's like when you meet him in real life, he's like, I mean, he's like you. He's like an incredibly sweet, you know, just like wonderful guy. And then you see him in this movie and you're just like, wow, he's fucking evil and terrifying. you know, so yeah, highly recommended.
I was on a podcast a couple of weeks ago for Daily Dead, and we were doing a tribute to Stuart Gordon, and we were trying to figure out kind of what makes a Stuart Gordon movie a Stuart Gordon movie. And one of the things I said was exactly what you just said, was this idea that his movies never pull any punches, that they always completely go for it, no matter what genre he's doing. He just always went for it 100%, and it's awesome to watch.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, it's like, I do see, you know, I mean, it's been really amazing, too, to kind of see the huge response he's gotten. You know, he like had this like big obituary in the New York Times and just had all these like huge people write about him, like Rob Zombie and, you know, like some of the Star Trek creators and just all these, you know, John Carpenter and just everyone imaginable. And it was like, I mean, I actually think he got a bigger kind of response. I mean, at least from where I was, than, you know, like with some of these other guys, like, you know, George Romero and Wes Craven. And it was just, I was totally like blown away to see the huge response he got. So yeah, he's a legend, man. And his movies will live forever.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right, the other thing I wanted to ask is, I think you and I differ a little bit when it comes to how we're dealing with the pandemic, because we were talking a little bit offline, and you said you were watching a bunch of movies like about these kinds of pandemics or about kind of apocalyptic shit. And I was like, oh gosh, I'm avoiding it as much as possible by watching like Steven Seagal movies. do you find it comforting to watch these kinds of movies right now? Or is it just like, this is the mood I'm in, so this is what I want to see?
No, I mean, I find it, I don't know. It's like, I feel like very bonded to these movies in a weird way. And like, I want to kind of like fully experience whatever this thing is as much as, you know, possible. But I mean, it's sort of like, it's also a good reminder for how much worse things could be. And it like gives me a lot of perspective on that, where I'm like, okay, like grocery store is still open. You know, it's, you're not, you know, I rewatched The Road, which I haven't seen since like the theater. And I remember just being like, you know, one of the most depressing movies I've ever seen. And then now I'm like, okay, we're not like having to like kill animals for food and stuff and like worry about getting eaten by cannibals and like that kind of thing. So, you know, it's I've tried to mix it up and, you know, watch some normal movies too.
I can't watch this stuff because I worry that, like, okay, well, what if it were to come to that? What if things do start to get worse and start to fall apart? And what if, like, I have no survival skills, right? Like, I don't.
You can learn them. It's fine, man. I mean, I, like, dude, a few months ago, it's like I didn't know how to cook anything, and now I feel like, you know, I'm like a master chef, and it's like, it's just a, you know, like, you can do all this stuff. You know, it's just, you gotta just get over the initial like fear of it. And then once you start getting into it, it's a hell of a lot more doable. But yeah, I mean, dude, you've like raised two kids and have,
oh, barely, you know,
like I wouldn't know how to do that. It's like, that's like unfathomable to me. Like I that seems much harder than, you know, any of this other stuff. So
fighting off cannibals.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's like they'd probably go down quick. You know?
I stopped watching The Walking Dead, A, because I just was kind of burnt out and kind of I thought it was repeating itself, but also because I couldn't answer the central question of like, what are they fighting for? Like, why are they even trying to survive? I don't have that thing in me where I'm like, I will live no matter what. You know, I'm very quick to give up. So I hope it doesn't come to that.
Yeah, I don't think it will, but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I like, trust me, your survival instincts will 100% kick in when that time comes. It's like, I guarantee you're capable of a lot more than you're giving yourself credit for, you know, and it's like, yeah, you'll be fine, dude. It's all going to take care of itself at some point or another, and you know, we'll be fine. We just have to, you know, do the social distancing thing and not go crazy, and everything will be taken care of.
All right. If you say so, I'm taking your word for it.
You can quote me on that.
Well, speaking of apocalyptic plague movies, let's talk about The Omega Man. I had put it to you, like, any movies you feel like talking about, and this was the one that you named. So let me ask, what was it about The Omega Man that made you want to talk about it?
You know, I mean, it's been one of my favorite movies for a really long time. I think I first saw this in 2001 or 2002. I was like a teenager at the time, but it just like blew my mind the first time I watched it. And, you know, I read I Am Legend, the book that it's based off of, and, you know, that is still, you know, probably my top three favorite books of all time. But yeah, it always had this huge impact on me where it's like, I just remember the movie so vividly. And, you know, I've rewatched it a number of times throughout the years, but, you know, the opening is just such a, it's such a grabber, like of your attention. 'Cause it's just, it starts, he's going through empty Los Angeles and his, you know, in his classic car with like the roof up and, the roof down. And, you know, there's absolutely no one to be seen in the downtown area. And he, you know, puts on an 8-track and he's cruising around and then, you know, spies some movement in this building and then, you know, takes out his, you know, submachine gun or whatever and, you know, starts blasting away and then, you know, goes right back into the routine of, you know, driving at like, kind of nothing had happened. And the movie has this, a very kind of like realistic, as weird as this sounds, like a realistic quality for how we kind of adapt to the uncanny, you know, and like all the sort of like incredible elements that are now around us where we just, you know, change gears very, very quickly. And so I've just been like ruminating on it a lot. And I was like, this would be a great one to kind of do a deep dive on.
So I only saw this movie for the first time last year.
Whoa.
Yeah. Erica and I went to like an all day marathon of science fiction movies. And this was one of the movies that they played. There were a couple movies actually. This Village of the Damned I had never seen that they showed time after time was my first time viewing. Yeah, yeah, I loved it.
Yeah. Which Village of the Damned, the Carpenter or the black and white
the
one?
Black, I had seen the Carpenter one. I had never seen the original.
Oh, the original is so great, dude.
Yeah, I liked it better than the Carpenter one. I don't hate the Carpenter one, but I liked this one a lot better.
Yeah, the Carpenter one I think is you know, decent, but the original is excellent.
I was convinced when the Scream Factory disc of the Carpenter one came out. I put it on and hadn't seen it probably since the theater. And the first 15 minutes, I was like, oh my gosh, is this movie secretly a masterpiece? Like, is this John Carpenter's most slept on movie? And then about 15 minutes in, it kind of fell off a cliff. And I was like, oh shit, okay, no, it's not. But what an opening.
Yeah, I mean, it's got some great sequences in it, too. You know, I mean, the stuff with, like, the kid, you know, forcing Mark Hamill to commit suicide, I think is, like, a really good, you know, unnerving sequence. And, you know, some of the stuff toward the end where he's, like, trying to, like, hide, you know, his thoughts right. from those kids, I think is, like, a cool idea. But, yeah, it's definitely an uneven movie, and I think he's acknowledged that multiple times. Like, he was supposed to be doing Creature from the Black Lagoon, like a remake of that, and then like that it just changed gears really quickly, and then that got slotted in there.
Oh, okay. See, I had always heard that he directed this in order to direct the Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Well, maybe that was it. I thought it was like he was doing that, and then it got shuffled around, and he had to do this one first. Or you might be right. I'll defer to you on that.
I have no idea. But yeah, the Omega Man. So last year was my first time seeing the Omega Man, and I liked it. I will admit that I liked it a lot better watching it today for the second time, and maybe that's because, you know, the first time you're just sort of letting the experience happen to you for the first time. You're sort of recognizing the story beats and, you know, allowing yourself to just kind of go along for the ride. And then this time I was a little bit more in tune with like some of the filmmaking and some of the Charlton Heston performance and some of the music. And I was paying attention to the margins a little bit more because I already knew the story and kind of already had some experience with the movie. So I actually found myself liking it even more, even though, yeah, there was certainly some stuff like when we get the flashback scenes to society falling apart and stuff, you know,
yeah,
it's a little triggering.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, even, you know, even I was like, you know, rewatching it. I watched it again a couple weeks ago, and then I rewatched it again, you know, today just to kind of prepare for this. But yeah, it's like this stuff of they're like, oh, it's this virus that spreads from person to person, and they start asphyxiating and can't breathe and all that. You're just like, oh, God.
Yeah. Right.
Really, like, really close to home. And you know, all the news coverage stuff of it just feels eerily prescient. It's like, and it's actually like kind of, it's so shocking too, like how right they got a lot of that stuff, because most of the time it's like you see how some of these, you know, movies will like treat certain events that end up happening, and you're just like, well, you know, that's ridiculous, and like that, you know, didn't go down anything remotely like that. But yeah, it was pretty right on for a lot of it.
How closely does this follow the Richard Matheson book? Because I've never read it.
Well, there's a good chunk of it that's pretty similar. Like, I mean, it opens in kind of a similar way where it's like he's, you know, he's going to get gas, and then I think he's driving around. There's no one anywhere, and then he realizes at a certain point his like watch stopped, and it's like getting dark, and he just, you know, wasn't paying attention, and he has this like massive panic attack, and then has to like race across town to get back to his kind of like domicile, where, you know, he's like secured everything. And you know, I mean, there's, so I mean, like that, the early stuff tracks pretty closely to it, and it's like up until he meets Lisa, it's pretty close to the book, but it's like there's no other like real survivors in the novel. You know, I mean, it's like he meets a girl in it, and they have kind of a thing, and that, you know, goes into like a different branch, but the end of the book is sort of similar, you know, but they're pretty different beasts. And I think like Richard Matheson even quoted it where he said it was so different. from his book that it didn't even bother him. You know, he was he just looked at it like it was like a he sort of liked that they just did something like very different with a lot of it, which, you know, I can respect. But yeah, I mean, they're both kind of like their own beast. You know, I mean, I've never seen the 2007 version, and I probably never will, but it's the originals, like the Vincent Price one is really cool. I don't know if you knew that was they had like a prior adaptation. That one is like pretty dead on to the book. And I don't think there's like a couple like little beats missing, but it's very close to the book.
I like that one a lot.
Yeah, it's great.
And I Am Legend is fine. Like I remember seeing it in 2007. I've never been compelled to revisit it. I remember thinking it was okay, but undone by a lot of like CGI nonsense monsters.
Yeah, that's like my real deterrent on it. Like, you know, I love Will Smith and I think he's great, and the idea of like Mike Patton doing, you know, creature voices is also very appealing to me. But like the idea of them just being these CGI kind of like, you know, video game characters is not because like in the book they're basically like they're these weird vampire people, but like they can still kind of like taunt you and torment you, and they start really fucking with him and like making his existence like a living hell, you know. And that's like such a key kind of piece of it, which Omega Man, you know, does to an extent. And, you know, from what I know of that movie, it's like it just seems like they're kind of mindless creatures that are trying to kill him, or you know, for better or worse.
Yeah, they're like descent monsters. They're like, and I think it was a situation where they shot it with practical effects and then went back in and like did CG over the effects, the original effects.
God, that's such a bummer.
No, that always works out for the best. Name a situation exactly where that hasn't worked out. Did you ever see I Am Omega?
No.
Me either.
Yeah, I'm not. I consciously forget that movie.
Life is too short for the asylum.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I love this opening stuff in the movie. I feel like I could watch an entire movie just of Charlton Heston like navigating life alone in this city, and the way that they, you know, I read a little bit that they shot just early on weekends, and so they got, you know, the city empty. But that's always super effective for me. Like, I think of like the opening of Vanilla Sky or some stuff from I Am Legend. Like when you get a big city and you just clear it out and you put one actor in there, it's so effective for me. And all that early stuff with Charlton Heston, just like cruising around the city, just works like gangbusters for me.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it's like, I just love the kind of like monotony of it too, where it's just, it's like, because I mean, it like we just adjust to this stuff so fast that it's like, even with all this horrible stuff going on, you're still kind of like, okay, I gotta put my mask on and my gloves and, you know, go outside to the get groceries for the week and like try not to touch anyone or what. But it's like you end up, you know, going back to your car and then you're home, and like it's just sort of like you've just like instantly adapted to it. And that, I love the way they chose to play that, where it's like he's not, you know, living in constant terror of these things, you know, and like it's like kind of a, like an ongoing like battle, and it's like they're inconvenient in some spots, but I just think it's, I think it's just a really smart, mature approach.
Well, he seems to have the situation pretty well at hand, too. Like, he seems to be able to overpower the mutants at every turn, you know, minus the very ending. But, like, they are, like you said, more of an inconvenience than a real threat.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, it's also, it's weird, too, because he's sort of the, precursor for, you know, all these kind of like 80s action heroes like Arnold and Stallone and these other guys, because it's like, this is, I mean, to my knowledge, you know, and I guess, you know, they have it to an extent in some of the James Bond movies, but it's like, this is the first time you can think of, or I can think of, where they've had an action hero that's kind of like dropping these one-liners and these like clever little quips, you know, and like he has that kind of imaginary conversation with, you know, when he goes into the used car place and he's like, oh, you cheating bastard or whatever, you know, he just has all these like little barbs to kind of like hold his sanity. And I just think it's super fun.
Yeah. I really like all that stuff. Him talking to himself. And, you just reminded me of something totally off topic. A reader on our site turned me on to the movie Undefeatable with Cynthia Rothrock. Have you ever seen it?
I can't remember what the one is with her and Corey Haim where she like kicks a burger out of the guy's hand. I can't remember what the fuck the name of that is.
That's not
Demolition. Fast Getaway, I think.
Oh, yeah, maybe Fast Getaway. I was going to say it's not Demolition High. I think it's Fast Getaway.
yeah, but that's I've seen a couple of her movies, but not met. I like her a lot. I think she's great. But
so they turned me on to just the final fight scene in this movie, Undefeatable. And if you think of it, look it up on YouTube. If not, I'll just send you the link, because it's one of the most amazing things you'll ever see. And they both get like one-liners at the end, and they're amazing. I can't speak highly enough of the final fight scene from this movie, Undefeatable. So
yeah, no, she's a serious badass. I mean, I've got total respect for her. But yeah, I would love to. Yeah, send it over when okay. When we're all done with this.
All right. Well, anyway, I took us off topic. But you said one-liners, and I was like, holy shit, Undefeatable. So
yeah,
I have to make sure to send you that. What's your take on the sort of mutants in this movie? Because for me, they're one of the weaker aspects of the movie. Not to say that I dislike them, but they don't, you know, as we kind of already pointed out, they don't really seem like much of a threat at all. I prefer them to the CGI nonsense monsters of something like I Am Legend, but they seem a little, I don't know. They're definitely like trying to do a thing with them.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of having their leader be sort of this cult-like figure, the Anthony Zerbe character. And like, they're definitely trying to do a thing with this like new world order of mutants. I don't know. I don't know if it all connects for me.
Yeah. I mean, I like it. And I do think, I mean, it is like, you know, do they build, you know, terror in you? Not totally. You know, I mean, it's not like, you know, watching Night of the Living Dead now, where it's like, it's absolutely fucking terrifying to see one of them, you know, like to see Bill Hinsman or whatever, like coming at you, you know, after like she crashed the car and she's like scrambling to get away. You know, it's like, it doesn't quite have that effect, but I like that it's kind of this, they have like a very measured approach of, we're right and we're going to exterminate you and we're never going back to the old way of life, you know? And it's like the idea of us existing as this kind of relic of the past, you know, and them wanting to snuff us out, I think is super interesting, you know? And I think it's a really cool approach, you know? I mean, aesthetically, it's a little weird that they're in like, he's kind of, you know, I mean, like the robes are fine, but they're very kind of like sparkly looking, which is odd, you know, but like, I think the, you know, the white eye contacts look cool. You know, it's like there's probably like something else they could have done to like make them look a little more, you know, unnerving. But yeah, you know, I will go on record and say I am for them. I think they're very interesting villains that we haven't really seen before, and I like that they can kind of, you know, get under his skin and, like, you know, bother him and, you know, come up with these, like, plans of attack to try to, you know, outsmart him and all of, you know, it's like that, that stuff I think works really well.
I wonder too, if, like, when we're on the other side of this whole thing, if these characters will take on some sort of new resonance. The idea of we're not going to go back to the way things were. I'm wondering how much of that we're going to experience when all of this is over. And maybe these characters become very prescient as well. Maybe the whole movie ends up being completely prescient. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I would not be surprised, you know, because it's like all this stuff, too. I mean, a lot of the actions that they take, too, I think are absolutely terrifying, you know, because, you know, toward the end when it's like when I was rewatching it, you know, it's like because he ends up building that. I mean, not to get too far ahead, but it's like he creates that vaccine and then, you know, they raid his place. And they start destroying all of his paintings and like all this stuff he's built up over the years. And they like smash the vaccines and like all the scientific equipment he's made. And you're just like, I was like, oh shit. Like I felt that, you know, in a way, like I didn't quite when I watched it for the first time. Like now the emphasis on that is far more terrifying of like, oh, they made a cure in some these like, you know, people just fucking destroyed it, you know, to like blaze this kind of new trail and like eliminate, you know, everything prior to them coming about.
I was very impacted by that scene as well, especially when they destroy the chessboard.
Oh yeah.
And I found myself though, like realizing that I'm clinging to normalcy in this way that like shook me, because really all they're doing is messing up a game that he had been playing with a dummy. But at the same time, it's like, but that was his connection to normal life and they've taken that away. It reminded me so much of Dawn of the Dead. One of my favorite shots in Dawn of the Dead is when they go into the bank and they walk the velvet ropes.
Oh yeah.
Because we're such creatures of habit, you know, and we're such, again, these slaves to normalcy, that we'll just keep doing these things even though there's really no need to do them anymore. And I found myself being so shaken up by that, and then I realized, like, oh, obviously there's bigger problems. Like you said, they destroyed the vaccine. They are probably going to kill him, right? Why am I so stuck on messing up the chessboard? And then I realized it was like, oh, because I am desperately clinging to normalcy and routine right now, and that moment is all about disrupting that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just so shattering too to just see your like you're saying, like your little pieces of comfort just get destroyed in like the blink of an eye. You know, and it's, it's powerful stuff, you know, I mean, it's especially too, it's like just seeing, you know, how quickly like movie theaters went away and all these other, you know, things that we had. It's, it's like, I mean, I felt for him, and it's like, you just like, you're like, oh God, they're just like stripping away everything from him. You know, it's like anything he likes is just ruined, you know, or right. Like anything that could, you know, like return us to, you know, civilized society is just, you know, obliterated.
I like that he goes to the movies all the time. I like that they have him seeing the same movie. Cause I feel like I would do that, you know, if I were Charlton Heston. In I Am Legend, I feel like it's either a VHS or a DVD of Shrek that he keeps watching, which like, it's not the same thing, because if DVDs exist, you can watch hundreds of movies. You don't have to just keep watching the one movie. Whereas this, it's like, this was the one movie that was at the movie theater. That's what he's stuck with.
Yeah. And it's just, it's like, it's also just so much more, you know, poetic, where it's like this thing about, you know, this big movement that ultimately, like this big societal movement that ultimately failed, you know, and that he's going back and kind of trying to re-experience it over and over and over again, where it's like this very kind of like important piece of like American cultural history, you know, like Woodstock, where it's like it's going to be in the history books forever. And, you know, being like, oh, he's watching, you know, Shrek. It's like, why? Like, what does that actually say?
It's just like, right. It's just some cultural reference. It's just like, hey, guys, remember Shrek?
Yeah, totally. It's just, it's like, I feel like you just lose so much flavor from it. And it's also interesting, too, because it's like, from what we know of him, it doesn't seem like he's a guy who would have actually gone to Woodstock, you know, and the fact that now it's the only thing he can watch and he's memorized every second of the movie and every line of it is like, you know, he's like grown to appreciate it on this deeper level, you know, and like that's like, I don't get how you would grab that from Shrek, you know.
Well, that's my, so, you know, my experience with Charlton Heston, I haven't seen like a ton of Charlton Heston movies. I've seen a handful. I've seen some of the greats, not all of them. So for me, I most closely associate Charlton Heston with his ties to the NRA. And so I'm watching this movie and trying to sort of navigate the cultural currency of like him being this sort of aligned with this very conservative organization. He's definitely, you know, running around and shooting machine guns and stuff in this movie. But at the same time, right, he has memorized Woodstock. He's in sort of one of the earliest big screen interracial relationships that we have in the history of movies. So there's these sort of more progressive ideas at war with like my own baggage when it comes to Charlton Heston. I wonder if you have any of that.
You know, I mean, like I've always looked at it. I mean, these things where it's like when you dig into, you know, the political minutiae of like all of my heroes or many of them, you know, it's like, I don't agree with their, with certain parts of their ideology and, you know, I never will, but it's like, I wouldn't necessarily like write someone off as a human being just because we have like, you know, I mean, like I'm totally for gun control and everything, but if someone's not, you know, I'm going to be like, all right, well, I'm not probably not going to change their mind. And, sure. You know, it's like, it's one of those things where, you know, he made a lot of great contributions to cinema. And I think there's always like a gray area with this stuff. You know, it's like, there's certain people like, you know, Harvey Weinstein, where it's like pretty unjustifiable to like be on board with him in any capacity forever, you know? Yeah. And, you know, there's stuff like this where it's like, he's aligned with an organization that, you know, has certainly some blood on their hands. And, you know, that sucks, but it's like, I still, you know, love him as an actor.
Sure.
And, you know, I'm going to keep watching this movie. It's like, I'm not going to just, you know, set it on fire or whatever.
Oh, yeah, no, I definitely didn't mean to suggest, like, I can't watch Charlton Heston or I don't like Charlton Heston because he was in the NRA. Just that some of the stuff in the movie, I just was like, I kept walking back and forth with like, oh, there's some really progressive stuff in here. And is that who he was at this time? Did he change over time?
But this is the thing too with him that's so interesting, because there is like a ton of cognitive dissonance with him, because he was actually like, I'm pretty sure he was friends with Martin Luther King and like made a lot of like headway on civil rights stuff, you know, and like, make no mistake, like he definitely had a say in a lot of this movie. Like when they made this, he had some serious star power, and sure, they're not like you know, these guys, you know, even in the 70s or whatever, it's like they're getting their opinions being heard, and they're going to follow suit with him to an extent because, you know, he puts a lot of asses in seats the same way, you know, guys like Tom Cruise or whoever. It's like, you know, he's in some sense a part of the creative process. And, you know, a lot of the stuff I've heard about with him in this movie and, you know, Boris Segal and the director and, you know, some of the other people was like that their take on it was, you know, if they had this huge societal collapse, like no one would give a fuck about what race someone is anymore. It's like that would be obliterated instantly because it's like, as soon as you're in this small group of people, you know, and it's like it's us against the world, like you're not going to, no one's going to be getting into that. And so I thought it was a super ballsy move for the time period because, you know, I mean, in the early 70s, it's like no one was doing anything like that. Right. I mean, like that is like a crazy brave thing to do. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of interesting quotes about it too from, you know, who he was like in a film context at the time, because, you know, prior to this it was like he played Moses, you know, in the Ten Commandments and stuff, and like Rosalind Cash had some quote where he said she felt like it was like sacrilegious to be, you know, screwing like a biblical figure on screen. And so, you know, I really like the cognitive dissonance of this movie, how it's like there are all these kind of progressive things, but he's also like, you know, this very noted gun owner, and like that stuff is what's so fascinating about humanity to me is, yeah, like how many different kind of colors we can get from people where, you know, we do have like pretty staunch differences, but you know, you can find some commonalities with them in times of crisis. Like that's really cool to me.
Cognitive dissonance is exactly, I think, the phrase that I was looking for. Just this idea of holding multiple ideas in my head at the same time as I was watching it, you know. And yeah. I really like his performance in this movie. You know, I know he has a reputation for going a little hammy sometimes. And he probably does once or twice in this movie, but it doesn't really bother me because it all feels, you know, the whole movie has a little bit of like a, it feels a little bit larger than life. And so I like that aspect of it. It's not necessarily trying to be like the gritty version of what would really happen if, you know, there's certainly some realistic elements to it. But it's also a little bit, for lack of a better phrase, comic booky to me.
Yeah. In a good way. 100%. You know? Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, the closest sort of DNA I think you have to another movie like this is, you know, Dawn of the Dead, the original, because yeah, it's like they both have that, you know, I mean, it's apocalyptic and, you know, I mean, there's a lot of like disturbing aspects about it, but they're done in that same kind of like colorful comic book fashion. And I mean, it's like they'd be a terrific double bill together.
Yeah, definitely. And he seems to, his performance is very much in the spirit of the movie, you know? So he is a little bit larger than life. And I think his casting is very clever in that way. Because it's a hard role to pull off. You know, there's a lot of pressure being the last person on Earth, and you want it to be somebody who's going to be captivating, who's going to get you through, who's going to garner at least some of your attention and your sympathy.
Yeah.
And he does all that stuff.
No, absolutely. And I think it's like everything in with him is credible to an extent, you know? And I mean, it's like, I'm not sure, like, you know, as much as I would have loved to have seen the version of this movie where it's like you had Charles Bronson in here, it would be like a completely different movie, you know? And it's like, I'm not so sure that would work as well. It's like, he very much fits the tone and sort of style of this movie, you know? And, interestingly, he was actually the kind of like the major spearhead on adapting it, because, you know, I was reading up on it, and he read the book, you know, he got a copy of I Am Legend and read it on a plane and was blown away by it, and then, you know, went to Warner Brothers and, you know, said he wanted to do an adaptation of it, and, you know, hadn't known they'd already done, you know, a version of it with Vincent Price prior to that. But yeah, you know, I mean, it was like, I do give him a ton of credit for, you know, this movie getting made, and just, you know, his performance in it, and just how much it kind of influenced so many other movies later on.
Wasn't for a long time Arnold Schwarzenegger was going to do a remake?
Yes.
Was it with Ridley Scott or with Paul Verhoeven?
I think it might have been both of them at different times, but I think it was, I do think there was a Verhoeven version, but I mean, it was going to be the Omega Man. I don't think it was I Am Legend, but Schwarzenegger is like a huge fan of, I mean, and like, you can totally tell, because it's like, watch, you know, fucking Commando, or, you know, like Raw Deal or some of these movies, and he's doing the same thing, you know, right. It's like, there isn't like, you know, this badass kind of like, you know, athletic male character doing these quips and, you know, shooting up a bunch of people prior to this movie. You know, it's like so, I mean, it really is like the proto kind of Schwarzenegger film.
I'm looking a little bit online. I can't find much that says Paul Verhoeven. Paul Verhoeven was going to do The Crusades. With Schwarzenegger, Ridley Scott was going to do I Am Legend.
Oh, okay, yeah. Maybe, for some reason, I thought he was attached to it. I mean,
so God, did I. But
seen, like that, I would have loved to have seen Paul Verhoeven and Schwarzenegger make an adaptation of this. But yeah.
So I don't know a whole lot about the director, Boris Segal. I looked up his IMDb, and it looked like mostly TV. He did a couple of features, but I was watching it, and his name came up in the credits, and I was like, boy, I've never heard of him. That's so weird that, like, this is a classic movie that I've grown up knowing about my entire life, and it's directed by someone whose name I do not know at all. But as a director yourself, talk about a little bit about the direction of the movie. Do you think it's a well-directed movie?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's like, there's so many great reveals in it too. I mean, he is sort of a weird, he's a little bit of a, like an anomaly, because I mean, he made a ton of stuff, but I mean, this was the only like one that, you know, really kind of stuck with people.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, like, the stuff in the opening is phenomenal. You know, I mean, like, that's, you like any, you could put that on in front of anyone and they're going to be blown away by that. You know, I think the reveal with like Lisa turning into one of the creatures is like expertly handled, where she's, you know, toward the end where she's like carrying like the two bags of groceries. And then you see like the mob coming with like the torches and everything, and they're behind her, and they, you know, they pan around her and show her like undoing her headdress after she's like dropped both the grocery bags, and then you reveal that she's like turned into one of them. It's just so, it's so like well choreographed and blocked, and you know, I think it's top notch. It's like, that reveal is great. The reveal of like Richie getting killed, I think, is really disturbing. And
yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it's just, there's like all these like cool sequences in it too. I think it's, you know, I mean, it's definitely like a bit workmanlike in a lot of areas, but you know, I just love it, man. I mean, I think he did a phenomenal job with it.
I was surprised to see that most of his work was like episodic TV, some TV movies, because I do feel like this feels cinematic, you know? I mean, it doesn't always feel like huge, but it feels huge enough at the times that it matters.
Yeah.
that you give a pass when it's, you know, people standing around talking in rooms. I was surprised to see that he was mostly a TV guy.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting too, because he, you know, he like died in like a horrific like helicopter accident too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Kind of like you know, William Girdler, and he's also the dad of Katie Seagal from Married with Children.
I didn't know that either. No kidding.
Yeah. So it's, but yeah, I mean, who knows? It's like, I mean, if he'd kept, you know, making movies, cause I mean, he only died like 10 years after this movie was made. So, I mean, he might've had like a, you know, maybe he had like another great one in him, but, yeah, it's very, very odd.
Oh shoot, there was something else. Oh, let's talk a little bit about this movie's insistence on Charlton Heston as a Christ figure.
Yeah.
I don't know that the movie earns it. I thought it was kind of a, and it goes back to that well more than once, because it has him sort of crucified at the baseball stadium. And then it goes back at the end after he's killed. He's very, I mean, he almost has to like intentionally lay himself in that position as he dies.
Yeah. Well, it's a pretty like on the nose metaphor, you know, and it's like, I'm not sure it entirely earns it. I mean, it's just, it felt like a very obvious kind of go-to for it, but you know, I could see where their heads were at the time with like him being, you know, associated as this kind of like biblical figure in these other movies. It's like kind of easy math to do on this, where it's like, oh, he's the last man on earth and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, I mean, there's a lot of like writing and in the movie and like lines prior to that, that I think are totally genius. Like there's a bit where, you know, that little girl asks, are you God? And, you know, Rosalind Cash comes over and she's like, let's find out if he's a doctor before we go promoting him, okay? It's like, it's just such like witty, sharp writing, yeah. You know? And there's another thing too from the Dutch character where he says something like, oh, I was a senior in high school when they scratched the world, or, you know, it's just, they have all these like great lines like that, that are just so rich and, you know, give you so much character about the, you know, the person that, I really respond to, but yeah, I mostly agree with you there.
The screenwriters also wrote, I didn't know this, wrote Boxcar Bertha and Battle for Planet of the Apes.
Oh, wow. See, I didn't even know that.
they wrote some other stuff too, but yeah, those are cool movies. So they wrote The Killer Bees, which I've never seen.
Yeah, I have not seen that one either. I mean, Boxcar Bertha is it's a pretty like sturdy film, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's like decent early Scorsese. I don't think it's quite as good as, you know, like Mean Streets or, you know, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore or some of those, but you know, it's definitely worth a watch. But yeah, Battle for the Planet of the Apes, is that the fourth one?
Hold on, I'll tell you, because I can, it's the fifth and final.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, that one I don't think I've seen, you know, one through three, and I don't think I've seen the other two, but I should watch them.
You should check them out. There, it's a really cool, I love that series because it just gets crazier and weirder and darker as it goes on, but in that cool, like, not darker in like the modern context, like the Batman versus Superman context, but like darker, like Omega Man, like 70s sci-fi dark, you know.
Yeah, well, that's like, I mean, I love this, you know, to kind of circle it around to like another one of the thematic ideas. Like, I've been really interested in, there's like this J.R.R. Tolkien quote about all of history being sort of a long defeat. And it's like basically saying that like with every victory you have like loss and sacrifice and There's always like, you know, evil on the horizon and all of these things. And I do feel like this movie encapsulates that really well, you know, where it's like, you know, there is like, you know, a defeat at the end, obviously, but I mean, it's still like, you know, there's still some sense of victory in that, you know, he's made this vaccine and, you know, these other people can kind of like carry it on and, you know, keep going with it. But, yeah, you know, it's just, it's fascinating stuff.
In the original book, I'm trying to remember the end of the Will Smith movie ends with like him figuring out that he's the cause of the mutation. I feel maybe I remember that doesn't come from the book. Okay.
Well, no, the book is basically that they view him as the bad guy because he's been, you know, snuffing them out and, you know, killing them and all of that. And so they look at him as like this figure committing like mass genocide, you know? And so he ends up realizing he's the bad guy to them at the end. And I mean, it ends in a similar way to this, you know, to this movie and the, Vincent Price one, you know, where he dies, but it's not, you know, he doesn't, he's definitely not the cause of it in the book.
And maybe I'm remembering, somebody is listening who really knows I Am Legend, like Ben Lyons or somebody, and who called it one of the best movies he had ever seen. I remember when he was on TV at the time.
Jeez.
When they took over, he said, "This is one of the best movies I've ever seen." Everything is somebody's favorite movie, right? So,
yeah, I mean, well, good for him.
I Am Legend is somebody's favorite movie. Somebody remembers that movie way better and is like, "What? No, he was not the cause of the disease." And I'm remembering it incorrectly, I'm sure. But it is much closer to the book, I think, in that he realizes that he's kind of the bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, it is a weird. I mean, there's a thing between these where it's like he's still in the Omega Man. He is still the good guy,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's ultimately like he is fighting for like the right cause, you know. And it's like he, you know, ends up like reversing, you know, those like mutation effects in the kid, and like, you know, he's trying to like fix this global problem. And you know, is ultimately defeated, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know there was like a couple endings for the Will Smith one. Like, I know they had, I don't remember what the deal was, but it's like they reshot the ending, and I don't know what they changed between the two of them. But I remember a lot of people complaining about the ending when that movie came out. But I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
Yeah. Something I read, the fountain on which Charlton Heston dies is the fountain where they built the Friends fountain.
Yes.
So that's history right there. Now I can't watch that show without picturing Charlton Heston dead in the fountain.
I know.
Lisa. Lisa.
Yeah, it's a weird one, but like it is what it is. Yeah, I think there's a couple other locations in it that are like from pretty prominent things. Like what the hell was it? Like with maybe like the 60s Batman show or something.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember, but I think there is one of those locations. I'd have to like look online, but yeah, it's kooky.
I really, the last thing I just want to mention is that I really dug the score.
Oh, the score's so good. That, like, Ron Rainier score. It's just, so. It's sort of a shame that they weren't able to use Strangers in the Night at the beginning, because I don't know, like, how big your TV is or whatever, but, like, when he plugs the 8-track in when he's driving around, it, like, very clearly says Frank Sinatra, Strangers in the Night. And it's one of those things, like, you know, Enter Sandman with the opening of In the Mouth of Madness. Like, if you sync those two, like, they just match perfectly, but like if you put Strangers in the Night over that, it like lines up to a fucking T with him driving around, and it's a little bit of a bummer they weren't able to get the, you know, rights to that, because it's just, I think it would have been like perfect for setting the tone. And, you know, I mean, the Max Steiner song I think is fine too, but yeah,
I never knew that about In the Mouth of Madness.
Oh, really? Yeah, it's like, well, I can't remember like how I figured that out, but at some point I was just like, I'm like, this sort of sounds like Enter Sandman, and then I think eventually it did come out that, you know, that was indeed the case. But if you're bored, I mean, like we have all the time in the world. Everyone listening to this should go, you know, try that out. But it's completely dead on. Like there's no denying it.
Wow. All right. Now I'm gonna have to try that.
Oh yeah.
Either that or just sync everything to Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah, there you go. Not a bad idea.
Anything else about Omega Man you want to say?
Yeah, you know, well, let me see. I think it's amazing there's like nudity in like a PG movie.
Yeah.
Like this, it's super, it's just so wild to see like how much that rating got stretched back then. Yeah, I mean, I think all the casting is terrific. Like Anthony Zerbe is great. I love Rosalind Cash in it.
Yeah, she's great.
I think it's Paul Laszlo. I don't know if that's the guy's name.
Coslo.
Yeah, the guy who plays Dutch. I think he's great. Yeah, I super love it. I do wonder if they're gonna at some point do another adaptation of. I feel like they're probably like fucking dying to do one now. And probably like relating it to, you know, like the pandemic and like the quarantine or whatever. But
there are hundreds of spec scripts being written right now just based on I Am Legend.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Well, thank you for coming on to talk about this. This was super fun and not as scary as I was afraid it was going. Not talking to you was going to be scary, but I was afraid watching this movie at this time was going to freak me out more than it did. So that's good.
No, you got to. I mean, I'm telling you, man, you got to face those fears, and they're never as bad as you think they're going to be. So, what's up?
Are you watching? Like, did you watch like Contagion or stuff like that?
No. Okay. I saw like Outbreak, I think, at one point, like the, you know, the Dustin Hoffman movie, which I remember liking. I mean, I haven't seen it in a while, but I mean, it's like I've just kind of stuck to like my, you know, era of this stuff, which is, you know, roughly like 30s up until the, you know, kind of late 90s, I guess. And then there's some more scattershot stuff post 2000 that I get into, but it's generally like, you know, a lot of my kind of comfort zone is in like the, you know, pre 2000 era. So Contagion, you know, it's Soderbergh, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I probably like that. I mean, he's made a lot of great movies. So, I don't know. It's like a lot of those just don't, end up on my radar for whatever reason. And then I end up kind of missing them. But, you know, he's a super talented dude. So who knows? Maybe I'll watch it tonight.
Oof, no, too close to home. Too close to home. It is. That was a terrifying movie when we weren't in the middle of a global pandemic. So I can't imagine watching it now, but I don't know. I know you're not on Twitter, but where can people find you on social media if they're so inclined?
I'm on Instagram at Mr. Jackson Stewart, pretty easy to find. But yeah, that's probably the best place to get a hold of me.
All right. And Beyond the Gates is currently streaming on Hulu.
Yes. And, it's like, Scream Factory put out a disc of it, and you know, there's some you can rent it on Amazon or iTunes or whatever your chosen device is.
My hope is that anybody who's listening to this has already seen it, because I haven't shut the fuck up about it for like 3 years. But if they haven't seen it yet, please check out Beyond the Gates.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'll send you your check at the conclusion. Skype.
We can wait till the stimulus comes out, and then you can just cut me in on some of that. Well, thank you again. This was awesome. And thank you guys all very much for listening. Everybody stay safe, wash your hands, and we'll be back next week. Thanks, Jackson.
Later.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.